Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
All right, talking about the United Nations, talking about recognizing all sorts of things. One thing they don't seem to have are working escalators, but we need to find out a little bit more about that. Joining us is John Day. He's an attorney in the United States. We wanted him to ask his assistance in unpacking President Trump's combative address at the United Nations General Assembly. So it was from a hard line on migration, multilateralism. His claim of triple sabotage does seem a little suspicious, but maybe it is all coincident. I don't know. And as you recall, that's a stalled escalator. It was a teleprompter failure, audio issues, and the question is, what was rhetoric and what does this all mean? John, a very good morning. Thank you for joining us. Hope you're well.
Good morning, Howard. Thanks for having me.
A great, great pleasure. Okay, so let's just talk about the substance. He clearly came to the United Nations with a very, very specific agenda. What was that?
Right. Well, this was a classic Trump event, a classic Trump moment. He used the General Assembly speech to, of course, blast the UN and a very aggressive tone. What does it even exist for? What's the purpose? Mm-hmm. It's outlived its lifespan. But apparently, behind the scenes, he was much more conciliatory. He was much more strategic. So, you know, this is what he does. He's so good at it in the sense that he can go publicly and this sort of inflammatory speech about the UN and about questioning its existence and blasting other countries. And at the same time, apparently behind the scenes, he was being much more diplomatic. And his goal was to try to, I guess he was entering into a bunch of different negotiations, which several different leaders, but you know, the public face is going to be aggression, and then he's using these specific incidents of the elevator stopping halfway up and as well as a faulty teleprompter as a part to stand for the whole. In other words, he uses these events, whether or not they're scripted or he takes advantage.
It's interesting
that happened.
Right. So he uses them. Yeah. He takes an event and he uses it to prove a point that he's been making in other areas. Really.
Yeah. It's his political genius. You can't deny that he is it's effective in the sense that suddenly the focus is on the very specific technical failures. But again, he uses that to broadcast the fact that this stands for the absolute failure in his mind of the UN.
He attacked the mayor of London as well, which I thought was interesting. I mean, I really did get a little bit of joy out of that, which is very unprofessional of me. But it was actually very, very funny, I thought. What did he say? Oh, terrible mayor, awful mayor.
Well, it's, you know, again, Trump loves, it's important for him and it's effective for him too. And there's a strategy behind everything he does in the sense that he has this, what he would call a boogeyman. I mean, someone he can use as the target, you know, saying that London is under Sharia law, saying that, but the mayor Khan has always been a target for Trump, but he's able to focus his supporters on, he's good at the exaggeration in the sense that he can draw his people's attention to the things that he thinks are failures. And he's not afraid to do that in the States either. He does that all the time to Democratic governors throughout the state. So he's just transferring it to an overseas, a Trump account, basically, here, yes, attacking the mayor. But it's, you know, the General Assembly, it's a time for all these world leaders to have their 15 minutes of fame in front of the General Assembly and make their case in front of the world for their various causes. And Trump is just much more effective at it than anybody else.
The fact that the United Nations is on American soil, obviously we've seen him flex that with granting visas to Palestinians who were unable to travel to the United Nations. What is the power that having the United Nations and criticizing the United Nations has, given the fact that he's hosting them effectively?
Well, you know, Trump has never been a fan, at least in his recent incarnation as a Republican leader. He's never been a fan of the United Nations. At the same time, he apparently made a bid, pre-presidential bid, when he was running his construction and real estate businesses, to renovate part of the building, or at least redo a large chunk of the UN physical plant, and he didn't get the contract. And apparently that's something that has annoyed him over the years. And he's made some points recently of saying, well, if I had had that contract, it would have been a different situation. But again, this plays into this, highlights the brilliant political sense he has, which is, everything is personal. Everything seems to be a personal grievance, but it is as effective as anything can be with his base of support here in the States. And he's trying to translate that to an overseas message. And we'll see how effective it can be. But at least here in the U.S., it's incredibly effective for his people.
Well, what's interesting to me is that I think it's always personal, not only about Trump, about others as well, about their relationships, about their nuances, about the framing that they bring to the United Nations or wherever it would be. But there's almost this expectation that there is this veneer that separates the personal from the professional. In many ways, what Trump has done, which I think is brilliant and right, it doesn't mean I'm always going to agree with him, but the fact is that there is none of that separation. And the reality is there isn't that anyway. We just all have to pretend there is in other places. And I'm wondering if that is why he is found to be jarring to many of the other world leaders who continue this pretense when Trump is not doing so. Give me your thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think that you've really sharpened the focus on that question. And take as an example, as you were saying that, I was thinking about the leaders who have managed to understand, comprehend, and integrate the Trump playbook into their own relationships with him. Look at probably the one who does it the best is Macron of France, who is able to, he understands Trump. There's a sort of a very funny video. Macron was supposed to be going to the UN. There was a large traffic jam in Manhattan because Trump's motorcade was going to the building. And of course, because he's Trump and he's the president of the US, everything shut down for his motorcade. Macron and his security people got out of their big black SUVs and then walked the 20 blocks or something across Manhattan. And as he was doing that, he calls Trump on his cell phone. Macron is seen on video picking up his cell phone. He calls Trump to say, hey Donald, I can't move because you're blocking the traffic. And they have this sort of very light, humorous exchange. And it sort of shows Macron's ability to personalize his relationship with Trump, even though their politics are different. And it also shows that they've learned, Macron and others have learned, also including the president of Finland, who's also a big Trump fan, and Trump is a fan of his, I guess, or at least he's very skilled at working with Trump. These leaders have learned flattery will work with Trump, and it's something that Trump is able to play into. I think a lot of it is real for him, but also he's able to use that to enhance his stature as someone who these world leaders come and not so much supplicate before him, but they know how to play his ego, and they succeed in doing that. Macron is the best example. Starmer is learning how to do it, I think. But we see that here in the States as something that people I think are very amused by it, to show that these world leaders know how to come and get what they want from Trump by flattering the heck out of him.
That is so interesting. And just to finally, this Do you think there's any, is there any understanding or any credibility being given to the three things that went wrong at the United Nations, or is it just really seen to be coincidence and sort of systems failure that, as you said before, Trump is using to his advantage? But any substance to it, do you think?
Yeah, I think from what I've been seeing, the UN's response on this, so this, what happens is Trump is going up this very long elevator and halfway up it stops. And it annoys him. And what the UN is saying is, well, there was a, one of Trump's photographers, a videographer, went up ahead of him to try to capture this moment. And apparently he inadvertently hit some power kill switch that stopped the escalator. That's the UN's explanation. Trump says there needs to be a criminal investigation. I mean, this is what, you know, that's not unusual for him. When something happens, it's always attributed to a conspiratorial act. And so, but he's able to use that. And plus, apparently, his teleprompter failed. And the UN says, well, we had nothing to do with that. It was Trump's staff who were writing the teleprompter, which makes sense because those things are not, I mean, you have to sort of know what you're doing with your person. But so, I mean, it may or may not have anything to, I mean, there, it's unlikely that there was anything malicious in this. It's just technical problems. But, you know, in the mind of Trump, here's an example of how we can use it to attack the UN and raise suspicions in people's minds about the legitimacy and competence of the United Nations.
That is where we leave it. Absolutely fascinating conversation. John Day, thank you. Thank you as always. Normally John stays up late to speak to us. This time, because he's traveling, he got up very early to speak to us. So either way, it just never seems to be too convenient, but he always joins us nonetheless.